Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Momentum is building in many communities to reform the nation's cash bail system. According to a recent report issued by pretrial detention reform work groups, the system is unsafe and unfair, exacerbates socioeconomic disparities and racial bias, and disproportionately advantages those with big bank accounts. However, there is resistance in many communities, and especially from specific interest groups like the bail bond industry. My guests today will discuss why they think the cash bail system is an immoral and unjust practice that penalizes people for being poor, and what other jurisdictions have done to replace the current system to increase public safety and create a more just and equitable system for all people. Joining me today for today's show are Barry Price, co-chair of Bend the Arc, San Luis Obispo chapter, Dr. Patricia Gordon, and Dr. Ellie Axelroth, both with Bend the Arc. Today's show is live, and we invite you to join our discussion with your thoughts, comments, and questions. And you can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. And again, I want to give you that phone number because we do encourage your comments and your questions on this very important topic. This is 805-781-3875. And thank you very much for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So I'm sure a lot of people have not heard of Bend the Arc, and that would be one of the first places I would like to go. So could you talk a little bit about what the organization is, who joins, and what the purpose is?
Sure. Thank you for having us. This is Ellie. Bend the Arc is the only national Jewish organization that's focused solely on promoting progressive social justice values in the U.S. And some of the campaigns that Bend the Arc is working on now have to do with immigration rights, for example, working toward a Clean Dream Act, criminal justice reform, for example, our discussion today on bail reform, police violence, sentencing disparities, voting rights and economic justice. Bend the Arc supports a minimum $15 an hour minimum wage. And we got together. It's a national organization, but we are a San Luis Obispo chapter because we're passionate about these issues. And that's what brings us here to talk about bail reform.
Now, when was the organization, the local chapter, formed?
I would say probably a year or two ago.
Okay, so fairly recently.
Yes.
Yeah. And the membership, you said that the basis of it has been a Jewish organization. Does one need to be Jewish?
No.
Jewish faith in order to join?
Absolutely not. We encourage anyone to join. And although it is based on Jewish values, I think if you talk to Muslims, Christians, mm-hmm. atheists, you would find very similar values. It's really a very progressive kind of social justice platform.
And what was it that happened in the last year that kind of spurned this?
Well, we were already thinking about establishing a Bend the Arc chapter before the election, but that really did spur us on because I think we're honestly horrified by the social justice implications. And so we've coalesced around that and some of these other issues.
So today's topic is really specific about the bail system, the cash bail system, and talk a little bit about what a cash bail system is, because that may not be a familiar term.
Okay. Yeah, what we're talking about is the cash for bail system, whereby people who are arrested before they've ever appeared in court or seen a judge or go to trial can buy their way out of jail by either paying a full bail amount, which is set by an established schedule, or by paying a percentage to a bail bondsman. The current system is really broken. It's not a smart system, and it's not a safe system, because if you have the cash, you can buy your way out regardless of the crime that you've committed. And it's just not smart to make decisions about whether somebody should be released from jail or not because of whether they have money or not. Those decisions should be based on the risk of that person committing more crimes when they're out, or the likelihood that they're going to return to court to face trial. And so we need a system that prioritizes public safety, restores justice to the pretrial process, because far too many people are being held in jail simply because they can't afford to pay to get out.
I want to break down the cash bail system a little bit further, too, and talk about some of the specifics, because I think if people just watch cop shows on television and you watch how people are arrested and how they go to trial, the thinking is that if someone is supposed to be dangerous by the police officers or by a district attorney, that they would never be able to come up for bail. So what you're saying is that in most cases, if someone has money, either through a bail bondsman who is making a lot of money on this prospect, or someone has the cash, they're more than likely going to be able to get out of jail. And there's nobody really determining whether or not that person is safe, going to go out and recommit a crime or harm somebody that's on the streets.
That's correct. The current system does not use risk assessment tools to determine whether it's safe to release people on their own recognizance or even by paying a cash bond. And what we're proposing is to change that system so that courts have more information and can make more informed decisions about who should be released and who should be held, regardless of their financial status.
Okay, so it also is not determined that the person has committed the crime. Is that correct? When they bail?
Well, one of the fundamental tenets of our justice system in the United States is that people are assumed to be innocent until they're proven guilty
right.
in court.
Yes.
And the current system basically turns that on its head.
Yes. And talk a little bit more about how that happens when you make that statement.
Well, in California, 63% of people who are arrested are held in jail pre-trial, before they've ever seen a judge or gone to court, simply because they don't have the money to pay bail. That amounts to about 46,000 people in the state of California who are being held pre-trial. About 40% of those people will ultimately have the charges dropped. Another percentage will be adjudicated as innocent. But they've been held in jail sometimes for weeks, months, or even years. And so they've essentially been judged guilty before they've ever gone to court.
And for the sole reason of poverty. They don't have the ability to pay cash or even to come up with the funds to pay the percentage that they need to pay a bail bondsman.
That's absolutely correct, Kim. Most people who are held simply don't have the money. And the current system disproportionately affects poor people, people of color, and other minorities.
Ellie, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, because this was a misconception that I had early on. When you can't afford the $50,000 bail, in California the average bail is between $40,000 and $50,000, when you can't afford to post that, you go to a bail bondsman and you pay basically 10%,
right.
$5,000. Well, if you show up in court, you don't get the $5,000 back. That's the cost of going to a bail bondsman. So if you
that's
have
their fee.
That's their fee. So if you have $50,000 laying around, then you do get all your money back. But if you have to go to a bail bondsman, you don't. So this is another way that it disproportionately affects people who don't have the funds.
And Dr. Gordon, you wanted to say something here, too.
There's a ripple effect to this, and we've used the term the new Jim Crow.
Yeah.
And that terms mean to segregate. And you're segregating a mass minority population, and the implications to that are just devastating for the families, for the children. People have lost jobs because they can't afford the bail system, been dismissed from school. And the magnitude of this is that our families, our children, our community as a minority, I'm African American, and I've seen the results of this in my church. I'm from San Bernardino, and it has a devastating impact on families of color, mostly families, not just families of color, but adversely, exponentially, families of color.
So if there are, for instance, street sweeps, or
yes,
someone is suspected of being involved in a crime and swept up and doesn't have the resources, a poor family, and in this case, someone of color who is swept up and has not done anything.
Exactly.
But maybe it's a student who's one of your students in college and can't make that. But it's going to take them maybe months to go to trial.
And we have the working poor. The working poor,
right.
And they are one paycheck away from being evicted,
right.
Homeless. And once you get into the system, there are still implications in the ripple effect. And those families that are living paycheck to paycheck cannot afford that 10%. That's a monumental amount of money for them. They lose their cars, and the ripple effect just doesn't stop.
Well, and what you're talking about there is somebody is driving a car. The car is impounded. There's a fee for the impound of the car that has to be paid to get the car back. So the family now has lost
exactly
their transportation.
Precisely, precisely.
If someone has a job and that is a minimum wage job, those jobs aren't going to be held until someone is released from prison. They're going to be replaced.
And the eviction process starts.
Right.
And then we're talking about child care. Those are people that are the working poor that may have an arrangement. However, now that they can't pay for child care, that is no longer an option for these people. So it truly is a new Jim Crow, and that's a book we should all revisit.
Okay. There's a question coming in for Dr. Gordon, too. So hold on. Donna, are you there? Donna? Can you hear me, Donna? Okay, we're going to put Donna back off, and we'll see if she comes back on. So it's disproportionate from people of color.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I would like to add
to that.
This destabilizes families and communities. When you lose your job, when you lose your income, when you may lose custody of your children, you lose your transportation, this makes it much more likely that you're going to have to resort to some kind of criminal activity in order to get money to get those things back. So the current system actually is less safe than a reformed system that uses pretrial risk assessment tools.
Now, in talking before we came in to get set up for today's show, we were talking about there's an assumption that this system is in place in all states in this country, but that's not the case.
Well, the United States is one of only two countries in the entire world that actually allows cash bail. The other country is the Philippines. So these are the only two countries in which this is even legal. Other countries have much different systems. States across the U.S. are now starting to realize the many problems with the current system and are starting to reform their systems. And states as diverse as Kentucky, Alaska, New Jersey, Connecticut, and others have all reformed their cash bail systems and replaced them with some kind of pretrial risk assessment to great effect.
Right. Okay, so let's take a call here from John. And Donna, if you're still listening, go ahead and give us a call back. I think we've got it worked out here. John, are you there?
Yeah, I sure am.
I'm going to turn off the radio here.
Did you have a question or comment?
My comment is 15 years ago I saw the disparagement of this system when my son got in a little bit of trouble, and I observed and watched this with a friend. It's a discriminatory system. It's non-progressive. In fact, I can't believe that it's taken this long for people to get up in arms about it, because to me, I abhor it, and it's actually represents the camel's nose under the tent, because you start finding that the whole legal system is kind of based on they're making a bunch of money off our families. The whole system is a prison industrial complex. Mm-hmm. And I've seen police overreach, police brutality, cruelty in the jails. Incompetence, mm-hmm. abusiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just glad that this group has finally got together. I want to join, and I'm an outspoken critic of our justice system, because it isn't that. It's a joke. And the judges have been complicit in allowing this stuff to happen when the Constitution is here to protect us. And I can't believe that when I first watched that, the whole program of the bail thing, I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me as a fair system. And it's so rigged, and a lot of people are making money off it.
Well, John, we appreciate you calling in. I'm sorry you've had to experience this, but I'm glad that you're...
It wasn't me. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. It wasn't me. I'm watching my son...
No, I'm talking about your experience through your kid.
The local thing here in San Luis.
Yeah.
It's a prison community. Mm-hmm. And he got in trouble because mm-hmm. of the economic disparities of this county.
Sure.
Young people can't get a place to live. The housing's so expensive, so they start getting in trouble. And you start seeing the whole society. I'm telling you, people, or I'll just tell you, look out, people, because we're living in a pretty weird place.
Well, John, if you'd like to join with some like-minded people and learn more about this, we have a program coming up. I'm going to ask Ellie to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, thank you for your call, John. Ben the Ark and the NAACP are co-hosting a forum this Tuesday night, the 23rd, at Congregation Beth David, which is on Los Osos Valley Road at 7 p.m. It's free. We're going to have six panelists, including our local district attorney, Dan Dow. Patricia Gordon, who's with us today, is going to be on the panel, and Barry Price. We have somebody from Transitions Mental Health, Jim McGuire, who's a retired public defender, and also Judge Don Umhofer, who's also a retired judge. And so we're going to have a discussion about bail reform and what we can do in this county.
Great. So you can show up to that.
You betcha. I'll be there.
Get involved. All right.
Welcome aboard, John. Welcome aboard.
Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, right on.
Okay.
Good to hear you, folks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Sari, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Can you hear me? Yes, we can.
Yes, my question is, first of all, hi, Barry. Hi, Ellie. This is such an important issue, and of course, I'm totally against the current system. But my question is, with the risk assessment, how would it impact perpetrators of domestic violence? You know, I'm afraid they might slip through and be free just to recommit.
That's a good question, Sari. And we're going to have Ellie go ahead and address that.
Yeah, thanks for your question. And it is a good one. And actually, under the current system, victims of domestic violence are at greater risk because an offender can be released and there isn't an assessment made. They go back home and they can continue to abuse their partner, the victim. But under SB 10, which is a new California bill that will be coming through the legislature, and through other kinds of bail reform systems, there's a risk assessment. And, for example, one that's being used up in Santa Clara County called ODARA, which is the Ontario Domestic Abuse Risk Assessment, it's a brief 13-question survey that police officers or emergency personnel can use to make the assessment about specifically domestic violence. And then the court, the judge, can either decide to release the offender because it's safe, or to place certain conditions on the offender, or to not release the offender at all because of the risk of domestic violence. So actually, under a bail reform, those victims of domestic violence will be safer.
Great, great. And you are with us on KCBX. This is Central Coast Voices. Today we're talking about the cash bail system as an unjust practice that penalizes people for being poor. Only one other country uses the practice, which is disproportionately impacts low-income communities, and especially those of color. Some states in the U.S. have adopted methods that replace this bail's practice, and California Senator Bob Hertzberg has introduced SB 10, which would accomplish the same. My guests today to talk about this and more are Barry Price, co-chair of Bend the Arc San Luis Obispo chapter, Dr. Patricia Gordon, and Dr. Ellie Axelroth, both with Bend the Arc. You're invited to join us in our discussion with your comments and questions, and you can call us at area code 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And I'm going to go back to Donna, who had a question. Are you there, Donna?
Yes, hi. So sorry, I was cut off.
No worries.
Donna?
Yeah.
Hi, I want to thank you all, first of all, for bringing our attention to this matter. So thank you for all the work you've done so far. I have a question. I think Dr. Gordon touched on it, but I'd like to hear a little more about how this impacts families, children, and women of color. And I'd really like to know, too, how it affects children on a long-term basis when parents have been removed.
Good question.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Donna, for your concern. One thing we talked about earlier is the ripple effect on women of color. The working poor, people that are making concerted efforts to go to school, to work, to hold their families together, once they are in the system, there is the implication, as we talked earlier about the new Jim Crow, where women, children are removed from their home. These are people, Donna, that are living paycheck to paycheck, and they're hanging on by a thread and trying so hard to move through this world. And suddenly, for a minor offense, they cannot, and they don't have that community of support to generate enough revenue to post bail. And therefore, they are retained. They may be evicted because they are now incarcerated and they can't pay rent. And we talked earlier about their cars being repoed or put into
impounded.
Yeah. And so the implications are 10 times worse for the community, the minority community, women of color. And so, Donna, I really appreciate that concern. These are debtors' prisons. These are debtors' sentences. And truly, we have to stop this because we're starting to see this exacerbate in the community.
I think the other thing, too, that you mentioned before, you know, is the fact that if this happens to be both parents or a single parent that is arrested, then you've got children that now have to enter into a foster home situation or are taken away from the parent. And that puts yet another layer and another impact on the children who are then extracted from a home situation. So it's profound.
And these women are not a danger. And the word profound is the correct term for this.
Thank you for calling in, Donna.
I wanted to add something else to the discussion, which is that sometimes what happens is that somebody is sitting in jail because they're waiting trial. They can't post their bail. And the public defender comes to them and says, well, if you plead guilty to this felony charge, then you can be released for time served. Well, so they say yes, because they don't see another option. Well, in some states, this isn't true in California, but in some states, if you've been found guilty of a felony, you can't vote anymore. You can't serve on a jury. You can't get food stamps. You can't be in public housing. There's certain licenses for jobs that you can't hold. So even though you've served your time, you still are on the hook. And it's still, you know, when we talk about down the rabbit hole, it makes it really difficult for somebody who has served their time to then become a good citizen.
Right. And that's not necessarily explained during the process at all times. Yeah. Talk about the industry, because when John was talking about this phenomena, he was talking about just the actual industry of this system, having private jails. Talk a little bit about that, because we know bail bondsmen resist, for instance, SB 10.
Right. Well, there is a prison industrial complex in this country that is composed of the private prison system and the government prison system. I don't think we want to leave that out, because that's part of the problem as well. Mass incarceration is largely the result of government policies and the bondsmen, and also in some cases district attorney's offices and courts, who actually benefit financially by receiving a percentage of the bond amount to fund the operation of their systems.
They do?
Yeah. In some jurisdictions, the courts actually receive from the bail bondsman a kickback, a percentage of the bond amount, and the courts use those to fund their systems.
Are these state courts or federal courts?
Most of these are local jurisdictions. They're county courts, city jurisdictions.
And there is they're funded based on numbers. And so that is also another negative incentive, is you're paid for headcounts.
For prisoners in jail.
Yes. Right.
So there's a real perverse incentive to not only require bail, but to require higher and higher amounts of bail, which just feeds the system. And, of course, these are the people who are most opposed to reform, are the ones who are profiting off of the current system. Most other people, when they learn how the system works, how unjust it is, how costly it is for taxpayers to maintain the system, and how unsafe it is, most of the general public says, yeah, we need to reform the system. We need to change it. It's only those who are profiting off the current system who are really opposing it.
How long have we had the cash bail system?
We have had the cash bail system since the founding of our republic.
So we've done it a long time. Yeah. Go ahead.
But it was also until the war on drugs in the 1960s, bail was set much less frequently than it is now and in much lower amounts than it is now. And, of course, we know that the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution says that unreasonable bail shall not be set. So it's written into the Constitution that this really shouldn't be set in amounts that can't be met by the defendants.
Talk about what happened with the increase in the bail amounts that were being set when that began to happen.
It made it a crime to be poor. That's the bottom line.
Simply and, put.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It's pretty succinct, yeah. So it made it so that unless you had money, there's no way you were going to be able to get out.
Not only.
And that came with the war on drugs, is what
exactly.
You were saying. And that was Reagan's era, was it not?
Yes.
Yeah.
It actually started with Nixon.
Nixon, yeah.
Yeah. President Nixon devised a very cynical political strategy to basically peel off Southern white voters from the Democratic Party. And that was based on racially coded language. And the whole concept of this war on drugs really is based on a racially coded system.
It's called racialized justice, injustice. Obama repealed and did a major legislative cutback on prison for profit. And the minute that we have this new administration, Jeff Sessions and our new president wiped it out and made it again possible. And the stock market for private prison doubled in one day.
Right.
The stock market. And so there are people that are profiting from the new Jim Crow.
And I want to add that the cost to California taxpayers of all this is just phenomenal. I mentioned earlier that we lock up about 46,000 people pre-trial in California who could be safely released. It costs the state $5 million per day to lock these people up. I want to say that again, $5 million per day. Per day. That's based on an average cost about $114 per day per individual to keep them in a cage when they don't need to be in a cage, when they're not a threat to the public, when they're not a threat to public safety.
Right. I want to get back to that because I have a question about that too. You're listening to KCBX. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. And this is your public radio station, 90.1 FM, San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas de Paso Robles, 90.9 Santa Ynez, Avila, and Cambria, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and on the web at kcbx.org. Our topic today is ending cash bail and why the system is immoral and unjust and what it can be replaced with. My guests are from Bend the Arc, San Luis Obispo Chapter, a Jewish partnership for justice that engages people and communities throughout the United States in creating economic opportunity and promoting social justice. They invest in affordable housing, foreclosure recovery, good jobs, and the community services every healthy community needs. Barry Price, co-chair of the San Luis Obispo chapter, Dr. Patricia Gordon, and Dr. Ellie Axelroth, all from the chapter in San Luis Obispo, are here with me today. And we welcome your voice in our discussion. We'd love to hear from you and hear your thoughts on this topic. You can call us at 805-781-3875. Again, you can join us, 805-781-3875. And my point on that is I don't believe that everybody that we're housing in California is from California. We're housing prisoners from other states here in California in part of our private
That may
prisons.
Be the case. I don't really know about that. I can't really speak to that. But I know that I just know that there are 46,000 people being held approximately pre-trial who have been arrested in California.
Yeah, yeah. And again, your point is pre-trial. That
right.
means they haven't been convicted.
Right, they haven't
of
even seen
the
a
crime.
Judge.
And
yeah,
that's or, just astounding.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just astounding. We're going to go to Sarah. Are you there, Sarah?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks so much. I was wondering if you could talk a bit more about alternatives to the cash bail system, sort of the new proposed systems for California, especially the factors that go into the risk assessment for deciding, you know, whether someone needs to be held or not.
You bet. You want to take that, Barry?
Yes. There is a bill that has actually passed the Senate, Senate Bill 10, which is the California Money Bail Reform Act, to reform the system and prioritize public safety and restore justice to the pretrial process. What SB 10 requires is that each county set up a pretrial risk assessment agency that will provide a judge with information about the risk of releasing an individual who's been arrested back into the community. I want to emphasize that the judge still has the discretion to impose bail for on people who are a public risk or who have committed violent crimes. But most people who have been arrested for misdemeanors or for nonviolent and non-serious felonies would be released back into the community with conditions, if necessary, for monitoring prior to their trial. And there are a variety of tools that these pretrial agencies can use to assess risk. And I am not an expert on all of those tools, so I'm not going to be get down in the weeds with it. But I can tell you, just for example, even here in California, some local jurisdictions are already experimenting with this. Santa Clara County has reformed its system and is now using these risk assessment tools. And 95% of the people that are released based on the risk assessment tools show back up in court. 99% do not commit any other crimes before they go to trial. So these are very effective tools.
How long have they been using this?
I think Santa Clara's been using theirs for about 18 months now, I want to say. State after state across the country is currently changing their system. And in fact, even on the national level, we're getting support for this. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, I mentioned Kentucky is one of the states
right.
that has reformed its system. So Senator Rand Paul has teamed up with our Senator Kamala Harris to introduce a bill into Congress to provide funding for states to explore and experiment with other forms of bail.
What has been the experience of the states like Kentucky for their systems, and are they similar to what SB 10 is proposing to be?
I can tell you, for example, about Kentucky releases about 70% of their people awaiting for resolution of their cases.
Okay.
89% of those make all their future court appearances. More than 90% are not rearrested for any other crimes before they appear in court. And as I mentioned, Santa Clara County's very successful pretrial release program has helped more than 95% of those released make all their court appearances, and 99% stay arrest-free prior to
their appearances. Yeah, and Santa Clara County has a very, very busy, I mean, it's a huge population that they're dealing with. So they're dealing with a large number of people. What kind of support do the district attorneys and the legal aspect give to this kind of a proposal?
Well, some district attorneys are starting to see the value in this. And we are getting, I don't have with me the list of all the sponsors of Senate
Sure.
Bill 10, but I know that district attorneys in some counties have come out in favor of reform, of various kinds of reform. And I would also say we've been very fortunate that Governor Brown and the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court have now come out in favor of reform. And Chief Justice Cantle Sequoyah appointed a study group about a year ago, a little more than a year ago, that issued their report in October and came out in favor of reform.
So what can people who are listening to this show do? How can they get involved? And what can they do to support changes that need to happen for a system that seems obviously inequitable?
Well, that's a great question. The main thing that we do, as I mentioned, Senate Bill 10 was passed in the Senate and is now moving through the Assembly. We would like our Assemblyman, Jordan Cunningham, to support that bill when it comes to a vote. So what people can do here locally is call Assemblyman Cunningham and tell him that the system needs reform and we want him to support the bill.
And if the bill is supported by the going forward, when would that be implemented? When could it be implemented?
You know, I don't have all the details of the bill, and I don't know what the timing of it will be. So I can't really answer that question.
It seems like a huge change in the system. So it would take,
it would take a big change. But many counties in the state already have pretrial service agencies in place.
Okay.
And other counties I know are already looking at this. Many counties are expecting reform. And so they're already preparing. So even though the system is going to change, and it is going to change, counties are already preparing for this. So it's not going to be as great a burden.
And Dr. Gordon, what points do you feel like we really need to understand in order for people to grasp this? Because we could talk about it, but people really need to feel some kind of commitment and an understanding of what's going on and that it's got believability.
Well, the first thing is we have to see this as a concern for the whole state. We've been able to separate this is a minority problem, people of color that are more violent, that are more criminalized in the system. And so it appears to be a problem as them and they. And I know for a fact that when we first started this war on drugs, it was directed at the minority community. And it was very clear. It was the Willie Horton effect, and that it was built to frighten people. And there is a racialization of the system. And if we can get those people off the streets, then we would be in a safe society. And we're finding that that's not the case. Even after people are released and that kind of thing, they're much worse off than they were before they went into the system. And Ellie made such a beautiful point about the fact that the implications are you can't vote, you can't get food stamps, you can't get child care. You have to put it on your application and that kind of thing. So even if you are guilty, even if you've served your time, your life has been altered forever. Forever. There is no walking it back.
I wanted to mention about just a plug about something else that people can do. Just mention again that we're going to be holding an educational forum on bail reform at Congregation Beth David this coming Tuesday night.
Talk about the 23rd. Who the speakers are and what they'll be talking
well,
about.
One of the speakers will be Dan Dow, our district attorney, and I think it would be really terrific for him to hear what the public feels about it. He's not one of our legislators, so he doesn't vote on SB 10. But it would be really helpful, I think, for him to hear about community support for bail reform.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Who else is speaking at this event?
Also, Patricia Gordon, who's here today, mm-hmm. and Barry Price. Joe Madsen, who is with Transitions Mental Health Association. We haven't talked about the mentally
impact,
ill.
No.
But there's a huge impact on the mentally ill in terms of their being able to cope with the system and what happens. You know, we had a tragic situation in our own jails that involved somebody who was mentally ill. Also on the panel, Jim McGuire, who is a retired public defender. And one of the things I heard from him was that when you are in jail before trial, you are not as well, you're not able to help your own defense as well as you can if you're out of jail. It also, as he said, doesn't help to come into court in an orange suit.
Mm-hmm.
And also on the panel, Judge Donald Umhofer, who's a retired judge locally. So I think it's going to be a really great discussion, and people will be able to voice their opinions and get their questions answered about how all this works.
Absolutely. I'm Chris Kington with you on Central Coast Voices on KCBX FM, the Central Coast public radio station from Salinas to Ventura. If you just recently joined us and they would like to hear this entire show, you can go to our website, kcbx.org. This show and all locally produced KCBX shows are available for streaming on demand at the KCBX website, where you can access them when it's convenient for your listening. We have about 10 minutes left today with Barry Price, co-chair of Bend the Arc, San Luis Obispo chapter, and Dr. Patricia Garden and Dr. Ellie Axelroth, both with Bend the Arc. We have time for probably one or two more questions or comments. You can reach us at 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. You know, as we're kind of going into the tail end of this, what do you think are some of the most common misconceptions that people have about the topic we're discussing today? Because some of the things really are unknown, as you said, Ellie. What are some of the most common ones?
Well, I think one of them that we've mentioned is that you don't get the money back.
Yeah, when you post bail.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to add is that we have a misconception that if you have money on the line, that you're more likely to show up to court. And actually,
has that been disproven?
Yes, and just like our doctor's offices that call us with a reminder call, when people get a reminder call or they get a call saying, well, do you need transportation or do you need childcare? What can we do to make sure that you come to court? That those things are way more helpful than actually having money on the line.
Yeah, because there's an assumption people are not showing up because they don't want to or they're trying to avoid something, rather than there are environmental factors or life factors that are preventing them from coming,
right.
Or just simply life, trying to navigate through life, they don't remember.
Right, or they're not able to get there, or
right,
they
exactly.
have a three-year-old at home.
Yeah, or a baby that got sick in the middle of the night and no way to call because they don't have a phone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or their car got repossessed.
Well, the other factor with that is we talk about the person not having the funds, the person who has been incarcerated, their family members don't have the funds. The people around them are also living from paycheck to paycheck. And so they don't have the resources to be able to generate that revenue to make bail.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're talking about $50,000 being the average bail, right? And $5,000 then would be the average amount that somebody would have to put up to post bail. That's a tremendous amount.
That you're not going to
I don't have $5,000 sitting in my bank account.
I read a statistic recently that said that about 50% of the U.S. population has less than $1,000 in their bank account.
Yeah, that is unaccounted for on any given time, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call from Josh. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
Comment, question?
It's a very interesting topic. I'm listening to this, and I myself have never been to jail through maybe luck or for careful. But the big disparity for me is that as I'm hearing you talk about this and stuff, and as I've realized in my own life, if you are wealthy and you have this money to post bail or can afford a lawyer and don't show up to trial in an orange jumpsuit, you fare so much better.
Right.
And the disparity between wealth and, you know, being considered not a criminal or getting away with your crime at an easier, you know, path, that really affects me in our society. I think if we need to treat people equally, then it shouldn't matter. Money shouldn't be as much of a factor in the outcome of those things. And the for-profit for prison systems and, you know, even how much money they're making on people making phone calls to jails.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You brought up another excellent point. The whole, you know, the whole thing is set up so that there are monetary gains for people other than the prisoners.
Follow the money.
Right. Yeah, I'd just like to add to that. Thank you for that comment, Josh. I'd just like to add to that that the wealthy in our society have so much privilege, including in the justice system. Take the case of there was a wealthy Los Angeles man who was arrested for a felony rape charge, posted $100,000 bail.
Cash,
was released the same day before he ever even saw a judge. A few days later, he killed his girlfriend and was arrested again. SB 10 would have prevented that. A couple of years ago, there was a man arrested in Kings County for attempted murder, only 5 days after he had posted $1 million bail for another murder charge.
Wow.
SB 10 would have prevented him from getting released. And finally, some of our listeners may remember just from this past summer, there was a situation up in Red Bluff in Tehama County where a man murdered five people who had just posted bail
right.
and been released on bail for stabbing his girlfriend.
Right.
And then he went out and murdered five people. SB 10 would have prevented that. So I really want to emphasize the public safety aspect
yeah.
and the improvement in public safety that we can get. And when you call Assemblyman Cunningham and ask him to support SB 10, you can emphasize that because
right.
I know he is very concerned about public safety.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, we've talked a lot about how there's certainly a discrimination factor that cannot be overlooked. And regardless of what color we are, there is the safety factor that should not be overlooked as well. Yeah, really good point. Thank you, Josh, for calling in.
Thank you. Great discussion.
Great. We have about 5 minutes left. Other things that are really important that maybe are misunderstandings that people have about the topic?
I'd just like to add that one of the things that the authors of the bill and the promoters of the bill have been most concerned about is protecting victims of domestic violence.
Yeah.
And SB 10 actually will provide better protection for victims of domestic violence. Under the current law, if a person is charged with a felony involving domestic violence, if he has enough money to make bail, he'll be released even before he sees a judge. That's got to change.
Yeah.
And we can change that with SB 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to add something just about more information.
Yeah.
So we are on Facebook at Bend the Arc Slow. So our event will be posted there, and you can get more information about Bend the Arc. Or you can email us at slow.bendthearc@gmail.com.
And you have, do you also have an event coming up on the 21st that you're participating in as well?
On the 23rd.
On Tuesday the 23rd, yes, okay. We have a community forum. We're going to be showing a movie called The Bail Trap.
Talk about what that is.
Which gives a really personal view about what happens when you're caught up in the judicial system when you're innocent and what happens if you can't pay bail.
And that's from the person's perspective?
Yes. And then we'll have a panel discussion on bail reform. So this is the 23rd, Tuesday the 23rd at Congregation Beth David at 7 p.m., and it's free.
Okay, great.
I might also mention very quickly another event that's coming up on February 3rd. That's the Saturday before the Super Bowl, and that is a Take a Knee for Social Justice event that will occur in the Mission Plaza. And that's being sponsored by the NAACP and several other local groups involved in social justice work here. And we would encourage you to join us at that event as well.
And the Bend the Arc organization, really, as you mentioned going into this, Ellie, is representing and standing for a lot of different injustices, not just for this one, although this one right now, because of SB 10, you're really kind of putting a focus on this today because you want to encourage people to get a hold of Congressman Jordan. You want to make sure that people reach out about this and speak up. But what are some of the other causes that you're really aligned with?
Some of the other issues that Bend the Arc is working on is immigration rights. Mm-hmm. And in fact, quite a few Bend the Arc people got arrested yesterday in the Capitol for standing up for a Clean Dream Act. Other things are voting rights and economic justice, for example, a $15 minimum wage.
And people are encouraged to go to Facebook to show up to the event, and you can ask to join the Facebook as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can also go to the National Bend the Arc website. It's bendthearc.us and get a lot of information.
And ARC
there.
Is ARC.
ARC, correct.
Yes.
We're so pleased that Bend the Arc is joining the community, the NAACP, to fight voter suppression. We're starting to see that occur, and we were very victorious in Alabama because
absolutely,
hundreds of thousands of voters were turned away, and they remained vigilant. And so that's a major factor going into this next election.
Okay, I want to thank my guests for today's show, Barry Price, co-chair of Bend the Arc San Luis Obispo, Dr. Patricia Gordon, and Dr. Ellie Axelroth, both with Bend the Arc. Next week, join Fred Monroe and his guest, Karen Adelot, and Mike Bennett. They'll be talking about the National Traffic Safety Administration's report about distracted drivers and what can be done about that. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, made possible by underwriting by Joan Gillett-Sargent. I'm Chris Kington-Barker. Thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices.